Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Hello, this is Michael reading the first article from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, May 12, 2020. Trish will read the rest of the articles from today's paper. Council to vote on $261 million water deal. Purchase would be part of agreement with San Angelo and Abilene, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council will vote Tuesday to approve a $261.089 million contract with Fort Stockton Holdings on a water deal that will last through at least 2070. The contract is actually the first part of a partnership with the cities of San Angelo and Abilene, as the three cities will share water and the expense. City of Midland agenda documents show Midland will collect 53.5% of the water and be responsible for $137.899 million of the costs. San Angelo and Abilene will agree to pay $77.223 million and $45.966 million for 30% and 17.8% of the water, respectively. Following the vote on the contract with Fort Stockton Holdings, the council will consider the execution of an interlocal agreement between the three cities. The ability to deliver water from the southwest would add to Midland's water resources, which includes decades of drinkable water at the T-Bar Ranch and Clearwater Fields in Winkler County, through 2060 and beyond, according to the city. The city also has the Paul Davis Water Field. The city on its website reports that current water reserves in the Paul Davis Field should last through 2030. The acquisition of more water should put Midland in a more advantageous place when it comes time to renegotiate with the Colorado River Municipal Water District. Midland is a customer, not a member, of the CRMWD, and having more options for the future might allow the city to guarantee a better deal the next time the CRMWD has to negotiate with its biggest customer. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton said Monday, "The deal is a phenomenal thing for the city and something that councils, city staff, and city leaders, like former Mayor Jerry Morales, has worked on for years." He said the purchase will require an infrastructure program in years to come to help access the water, but the deal helps firm up Midland's position while other communities chase potential water sources for decades. "Water is the most important resource," Payton said. "As the years go by, it will cost money to access it, but I can't overemphasize how important it is to lock up this water source. It is critically important to this region." Fort Stockton Holdings is controlled by the family of recently departed oil man Clayton Williams, who long sought the ability to sell water from his property. City documents show FSH owns a groundwater production and transport permit issued by the Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District that allows FSH to produce and use 24,800 acre-feet of Edwards Trinity groundwater each year. The regular permit also allows all 24,800 acre-feet of the produced groundwater to be transported and used outside of the boundaries of the groundwater district for municipal use. This contract provides that the City of Midland will purchase all 24,800 acre-feet of Trinity Edwards groundwater from FSH each year on a take-or-pay basis. The city will be required to design, construct, and operate a well field capable of meeting the city's needs and satisfying TCEQ requirements, according to documents. The contract grants the city access to the FSH property to develop and operate a well field that will serve this purpose. What the Midland City Council is voting on calls for the purchase of water supply rights of 28,400 acre-feet of water with an initial term of 50 years with two possible renewals. The city reports that the annual cost will be $2.833 million between 2020 to 2024, $3.192 million between 2025 and 2029, and $5.089 million starting in 2030, with an escalator of 0.5% annually to 2070. The contract will continue until December 31st, 2070. The city will have the opportunity to extend the contract term until 2090 and then again until 2110. The agreement gives both parties the ability to terminate the contract early in the event of a contract breach, which includes insolvency, material breaches of the agreement, and groundwater district termination of FSH's permit without any replacement by a functional equivalent authorization.
Hospital District. Sales tax election to take place July 14th by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. The Midland County Hospital District sales tax election will take place on July 14th after it was delayed because of the coronavirus, Midland Health CEO Russell Myers said Monday. The election was first scheduled for May 2nd, but then forced to move after Governor Greg Abbott suspended May elections. The hospital district petitioned Abbott to hold the election in July alongside the runoff election for 142nd District Court Judge and received approval, Meyer said during a press briefing. If residents vote in favor of the sales tax proposal, it will add 0.25% to the sales tax rate in the city of Midland and Midland County. As the city's tax rate is currently at 8%, the proposal would raise the tax rate to 8.25%. Waiting until November to hold the election would have cost the hospital district about a half a year's worth of collections if the measure is approved, Meyer said. He said the proposal meant to help mitigate a $38 million reduction in federal funding for Midland Health. The local sales tax at 0.25% levied across the whole county based on the most recent data would return about $28 million a year, he said, which would not recover all the lost federal funding, but would be a huge advantage to us in trying to determine how to keep doing the things in our community that we think are very important. The funding Midland Health will be losing is Medicaid supplemental funding, Meyer said. He said they're expecting the $50 million that they'll receive in the 2020 fiscal year to drop to $12 million by 2024. Meyer said the loss is devastating to the work Midland Health does outside of Midland Memorial Hospital, including physicians programs, medical education, and providing behavioral health care. All of those things are funded by those federal funds, and as they get reduced, we have to either find a different way to pay for them or cut them back, he said. We certainly don't want to do that in the interest of the community. Myers' announcement came a week after Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves, expressed concern that the coronavirus pandemic would create challenges with the runoff election. Graves said during a county planning meeting that her office is anticipating Midland County could be sued by voters who feel disenfranchised because of not being given the option to vote by mail, as has happened in other states. The elections office is also expecting a shortage of volunteers to work the election. The office is concerned they may not have enough workers to hold the election, said Graves last Tuesday. The hospital district sales tax election will be held in conjunction with the district judge primary runoff between GOP candidates Mary Baker and David Rogers. Early voting will take place from July 6th to July 10th. County. Court decides pandemic pay promise ends May 26th by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstNP.com. Midland County Commissioners decided Monday that county employees will have to use vacation, sick time, or any type of accrued leave if they miss work and expect a full paycheck on or after May 26th. The decision by county leaders reverts back to procedures in place prior to the coronavirus pandemic. In mid-March, county leaders voted to ensure all county employees will be paid if they need to take time off for any reason related to the pandemic, including school closures. County officials stated that 25,000 hours had been logged by county employees during part of the pandemic when the county guaranteed a full salary. That was hundreds of thousands of dollars in expenditures. Even County Judge Terry Johnson stated during the meeting that leaders provided a generous deal for county employees. There was conversation about when to revert to a pre-pandemic pay schedule. County leaders said during their meeting that the city was going back on May 18th. County officials decided to wait until after the Memorial Day weekend. Elected leaders and department heads said waiting until May 26 should give employees an opportunity to adjust. It was decided in the meeting that just because an employee would be required to use accrued time if he or she was to miss work, won't necessarily mean there won't be opportunities to work from home. County leaders said department heads will have the ability to determine how many employees need to be inside a county office at any one time. Some offices will be busier and have more interaction with the public. County leaders learned from those in the auxiliary courtroom. Precinct 1 Commissioner Scott Ramsey asked all elected leaders and department heads to tell the court how much activity they expected and how much employees were needed to be in the office. The answers showed commissioners that not all situations were the same. For instance, an official with the district clerk's office reported, "We need to get going so we don't get too far behind." At the same time, it was said that the district attorney's office probably won't be 100% as there are no jury trials right now. A grand jury might meet for the first time on June 3rd, and there's no plea deals even taking place right now. The county clerk's office stated that last week it operated at 50% staffing and that there is no point being 100% staffed until there are enough cases. Open up sometime soon because we are the government, Precinct 3 Commissioner Luis Sanchez said. The Midland Beer Garden Permanently Closes by J.C. Lewis, J.A.C.Y. period L-E-W-I-S at HearstNP.com. The Midland Beer Garden has officially closed its doors according to Facebook post on Sunday. The post thanked patrons for 5.5 years of support. The Midland Beer Garden has had a large selection of draft, craft beer, ciders, and wine with 74 taps. The bar and restaurant had greenhouse seating, outdoor seating, and a stage for small concerts. The venue had kitchen service that served wonton nachos, jalapeno poppers, and tempura shrimp tacos. With no promise but a hope that you will see us again, the Post stated, "We wish you all the best." The Post said the business, its equipment, and Pai Mei, a 16-year-old tortoise, are not for sale. At this time, they are not looking for funding. During the shutdown, the beer garden continued to sell beer, growlers, and food delivery and takeout. Another 6 test positive in Midland County by Stuart Doreen, sdoreen at hearstnp.com. 3 more residents of Midland Medical Lodge are among the 6 new coronavirus cases announced on Monday. The City of Midland and Midland Memorial Hospital reported that 3 female residents, 2 in their 70s and 1 in her 90s, tested positive for coronavirus. All 3 are currently patients at Midland Memorial Hospital. The Reporter-Telegram record shows 41 Midland Medical Lodge residents are tested positive for coronavirus. It was the second straight announcement of 6 confirmed coronavirus patients inside Midland County. The 3 non Midland Medical Lodge patients testing positive included 2 20-somethings, 1 male, 1 female, and a male child, 0 to 9. Their source of exposure for the female in her 20s and the child was travel within the United States. The Midland Health Department reported Monday that 35 of the 107 confirmed cases have recovered. It also reports the 2 age groups with the most confirmed cases are 20 to 29 and 80 years plus at 21 each. Ector County confirms 100th case by J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hearstnp.com. Ector County officials confirmed their 100th positive case of coronavirus on Monday. The Ector County Health Department website reported 5 new positive cases over the weekend, making the total 100. There are 3 probable cases at this time. ECHD reported 72 people have recovered. There have been 1,572 tests taken with 1,393 negative results and 79 pending results. ECHD has contacted 1,233 people during contact tracing. The drive-thru at the Ector County Coliseum received 9 positive cases. Of the 87 tests done there, 78 are negative and 0 are pending. In Ector County, 239 people have called the triage center for testing. County Commissioner Eddie Shelton said ECHD is working with Acres West Funeral Chapel to identify possible exposure that may have occurred on April 27th at 10 a.m. during a funeral service. Anyone who might have attended the service should call the health department if they haven't been notified yet. He said the funeral home has taken extra precautions to clean, disinfect, and will have all the employees screened. Medical Center Health System President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH has tested 864 with 56 positive cases. MCH is not treating any patients or patients under investigation for coronavirus at this time. They have received 783 negative tests with 25 tests pending. Odessa Regional Medical Center President and CEO Stacy Brown said ORMC has tested 334 with 15 positive. Brown said they have received 316 negative tests with 3 pending tests. ORMC is not treating any coronavirus patients at this time. Obituaries for Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. Benigno Salazar Jr. Benigno Salazar Jr., 73, from Odessa, Texas, went to his Heavenly Father on Thursday, May 7th, 2020. Ben is survived by his ex-wife, Carmen Salazar, and his daughter, Yvonne Salazar, of Midland, and his son, Michael R. Salazar of Frisco, Texas. In lieu of flowers, the family is asking for donations to be given to Gifts of Hope, westtexasgiftsofhope.org. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home in Midland, Texas, has been entrusted with the services. The family has decided to have a small memorial for Ben with immediate family and close friends. A celebration of life will be planned at a later date. Dorothy Lynn Butler Truitt. Dorothy was born in Midland, Texas, October 31st, 1928, to Lynn Lyle Butler, a contractor and veteran of World War I, and Marine Winborn Butler, a school teacher. She is survived by her husband Bob, daughter Cindy Truitt, son Brent, and his wife Janice, daughter-in-law Debbie, grandchildren Matthew Truitt and his wife Kathy, Luke Truitt and wife Manali, Patrick Truitt, Maureen Patterson, and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, Leo and Milan Truitt, James and Amelia Truitt, Chloe Patterson, Charles Butler and his wife Pauline, sister-in-law Joanne Truitt, and nephews, nieces, and cousins. Interment will be at Fairview Cemetery in a private family service. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions can be made to the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Pickle and Welch. Online condolences may be made at npwelch.com. Lewis J. Hillier, 60, of Midland, passed away on Friday, May 8th, in Midland. A celebration of life will be held on Thursday, May 14th, 2020, at 2 p.m. until 3:30 at Mid-Cities Community Church, Neely Campus, at 3309 Neely Avenue, Midland. Casual attire. Lewis was born March 15th, 1960, to Juanita and Otto Hillier in Dallas, Texas. He is survived by his wife, Marlou Hillier of Midland, son John Hillier of Arlington, son Jay and wife Emily, and grandson Elijah of Fort Worth, and daughter Joy Hillier of Midland, Texas. Lewis always showed compassion with and love for others with food. Making sure you were fed was his way of holding you closely at heart. To honor this principle, we ask in lieu of flowers, you consider a donation to Meals on Wheels. 3301 Sinclair Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79707. Arrangements are under direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Death notices. Benita Jean Birmingham. Benita Jean Birmingham, 93, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, May 9th. The family will have a private interment at their family ranch at a later date. Charles Dwayne White, Jr. Charles Dwayne White, Jr., 64, of Midland, passed away on May 9th, 2020, in Lubbock, Texas. A visitation will take place on Thursday, May 14th, 2020, 6 to 8 at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, May 15th at Nally Pickle and Welch Chapel. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, May 15th at the Kermit, Texas Cemetery. Francisco Morales passed away Sunday, May 10th. A private funeral service will be held at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Survivors include his wife, Sonia Morales, mother, Euphrasia Morales, daughters, Arinthe Morales, Aracela Morales, and son Francisco Morales. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Jose Luis Zuniga Arias. Jose Luis Zuniga Arias passed away Saturday, May 9th. Services will be held at a later date. Survivors include his wife, Aracela Murillo Chavez, sons, Jose Luis Zuniga, Edgar Zuniga, and Leonel Zuniga. Arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. Front page. Nursing Home Testing Needs Coordination by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O, at OAOA.com. With the White House administration recommending that all nursing home residents and staff be tested for coronavirus in the next 2 weeks, Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanen said medical and health professionals in Ector County don't know what that would look like yet. I don't think we have an answer for that just yet, he said. He said that nursing homes have always been listed as some of the highest at risk. There are talks of how we're going to get this done with the nursing homes, but periodic testing would require a lot more effort and coordination, so at least we can do one set of initial tests, if that's what's necessary, and ORMC will gladly participate in some way. He said that they would not use the rapid tests because they don't have enough, and to complete those tests, they would need the nursing home leadership to reach out to the hospitals and the health department. Medical Center Hospital Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Tillman said that the work would be similar to what MCH and ORMC did while testing employees and residents at Madison Medical Resort Nursing Home in Odessa. We do have those conversations probably every day, if not every other day, regarding the nursing homes and what we need to do to change things moving forward, she said. Regarding payments for those tests, it's all not coming from the hospital billing, she said. It's the nursing home paying for the employees or the residents. She also said that based on how many employees or residents are tested, the pricing would differ. A press release sent out Monday by Governor Greg Abbott's press office said that Abbott directed the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, the Texas Division of Emergency Management, and the Texas Department of State Health Services to test 100% of residents and staff in Texas nursing homes. Abbott instructed those entities to develop and implement a plan based on the guidance of Vice President Mike Pence and Dr. Deborah Birx, the release detailed. Abbott was quoted in the release saying that this collaboration will ensure that any potential clusters of COVID-19 cases in nursing homes are quickly detected and contained. During Monday's virtual hospital briefing, County Commissioner Eddie Shelton reported that there has been 100 positive cases of COVID-19 in Ector County. Sarvanen said that it's important to be cautious with gatherings and said that more antibody testing will give more direction of where Ector County is on the curve. Right now, he said, we are just as much in the dark as we were before, but that now residents are living in a riskier environment than they were a few weeks ago before the economy started to reopen, he added. Shelton reported that out of 1,572 tests, 100 have been positive, 1,393 have been negative, 79 are pending, and 72 have recovered. According to the Ector County website, there have been 4 COVID-19-related deaths of county residents. The Ector County Coliseum drive-through test site has received 239 calls, and out of 87 tests, 9 have been positive, 78 have been negative, and no cases are pending. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said that out of 864 tests, MCH has had 56 positives. One new case was reported positive over the weekend and was sent home, he said. He added that MCH has had 783 negatives, 25 pending, and there are no positive patients or persons under investigation in the hospital. One person tested positive from the National Guard testing. ORMC President Stacy Brown said that out of 334 tests, 15 have been positive, 316 have been negative, and 3 are pending. Sarvanen referenced children in New York City who have been hospitalized with COVID-19, saying, the fact that it gets them sick enough to be hospitalized is different than what we had seen before from China or Italy, where we were not even considering kids getting sick from this. He said that children are still a much smaller proportion of the illness demographic, and said that it's still going to affect older people more. Shelton said that the average age of COVID-19 positive cases in Ector County were those between the ages of 31 and 40 years old. As far as COVID-19 clusters, Shelton said he's not aware of any at this time and that there aren't any in Ector County. The health department is also asking anyone who was at the 10 a.m. April 27th Acres West Funeral Chapel service to call the Ector County Health Department because there might have been an exposure to COVID-19 at one of the services. Antibody Testing for First Responders by Tony Venegas, T-V-E-N-E-G-A-S at OAOA.com. In the latest effort to learn more about the prevalence of COVID-19 in Ector County, antibody testing got underway Monday at the Ector County Coliseum for first responders. The study, which was officially announced last week, is designed to see how many people have been exposed to the virus and how local officials can create a plan of action to deal with it moving forward. It's a good little snapshot for the city and community, so they can see how prevalent it is, said Danny Chavez, the Odessa Fire Rescue Training Captain. Before each responder goes in for a test, they are sent an individual link to fill out questions that include when the last time they were sick, as well as the travel history, in order to get a wide amount of information to complete the study. From there, medical officials will draw a blood sample of each person, and that will be sent off to a private lab to conduct those tests. Chavez said that the threshold was to test 500 first responders, with the results expected to arrive in anywhere from 2 to 4 days. The goal is to have the full results of the study by next week. We'll share this information with the city and county, and I think it will give them another tool in their toolbox to help make decisions, Chavez said. No one really knows the prevalence of this as we speak. The testing is scheduled to take place from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day this week in order to accommodate the rotating shifts of first responders. Chavez emphasized that the importance of having this information available for overall decision-making and peace of mind. "I think it's huge," Chavez said. "I think we're all excited and nervous to see where we're going to come out as a whole. If we didn't do this, I personally would have gone to a clinic for my own sake. This is a good check, and I think it will definitely give some people that peace of mind." COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 100. Ector County negative, 1,393, out of 1,572 tested, with 79 pending, 4 deaths. Midland County, 107 confirmed, out of 2,091 tested, 12 deaths. Texas, 39,869 confirmed, with 525,697 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,100. U.S. cases, 1,324,488 total confirmed, and 79,756 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/tztrjlf. Pet clinics. Fix West Texas has scheduled vaccination and microchip clinic May 16th by appointment only. Clinics will be set up from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Grace Christian Fellowship, 3450 Billy Hext Road, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. at Haverty's, 4110 Loop 250 Frontage Road, Midland, and 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. at First United Methodist Church, 208 East Santa Ana Street, Stanton. Venmo payment is required with 24 hours of booking to secure appointment. No refunds. Venmo, hashtag FixWestTexas. Book appointment at FixWestTexas.org. For more information, email registration at FixWestTexas.org or visit tinyurl.com/YAMJXTA6. Volunteers needed. Court-appointed Special Advocates for Children, CASA, C-A-S-A, are in need of volunteers. Application deadline is May 25th. Apply at casawtx.org, casawtx.org. Volunteers are essential for the organization. A CASA volunteer is an adult over the age of 21 who volunteers their time and talent to advocate for child abuse victims. When a child is removed from their home because of severe abuse and neglect and placed in foster care, a judge will appoint a CASA volunteer to advocate for that child's best interest. Once appointed to a child's case, a CASA will gather information and become familiar with the child's background. A CASA volunteer visits with the child on a regular basis and develops a relationship with the child. They ensure the child's needs are met while the child is in foster care. For more information, call Hope Stalter at 683-1114, extension 16, or email Hopes, H-O-P-E-S, at CASAWTX.org. From staff reports. Law enforcement agencies to take part in virtual memorial service. OA News at OAOA.com. Due to the coronavirus pandemic, law enforcement agencies will take part in a virtual memorial service to honor those who have died in the line of duty. National Police Memorial Week began on Sunday and continues to Saturday. The Odessa Police Department is set to honor the 9 local officers, 5 OPD officers, 1 Ector County Sheriff's Office deputy, 1 Lubbock Police Department officer, 1 Midland County Sheriff's Office deputy, and 1 Midland Police Department officer who died in the line of duty. The 5 from Odessa Police Department are Corporals Abel Marquez, Arlie Jones, Scott Gardner, Gordon Terry Toll, and Officer Scott Stanton Smith. Ector County Sheriff's Office is Deputy Sheriff Thad DeWitt West. Midland County Sheriff's Office is Sergeant Michael Joe Naylor, while MPD is Officer Nathan Hayden Heidelberg. Lubbock Police Department is Rodney Ray Lynn Kendricks, who is buried in Odessa. OPD is also slated to honor the 30 officers and 1 K-9 who lost their lives in the past year in Texas. Officer Down Memorial Page detailed on its website that 16 Texas officers have died as of Monday afternoon in 2020. The next closest states are Louisiana and Illinois with 5. In 2019, there were 146 officers who died in the line of duty throughout the United States. 18 were from Texas. New York had the most with 25. Le Sueur said the public wasn't invited to this year, but the service will be available on social media. This is Kay again, reading Section A, page 3, OAOA.com. Giving Tuesday exceeds expectations for food bank. OA News at OAOA.com. The West Texas Food Bank announced the results from a challenge match provided by the Silva Law Group, PLCC, and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association in the amount of $100,000. Generosity of West Texans, donations large and small, were matched, and the West Texas Food Bank reached its goal of $100,000, which, combined with the matching funds of $100,000 and the additional $100,000 already donated by the Silva Law Group and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association, will help it provide an additional 1.2 million meals to hungry West Texans. Food donations to the West Texas Food Bank have dropped to almost zero, as the retail outlets are selling out of items which are normally donated to food banks, a news release said. To keep up with the increasing demand for food and to offset the decreasing amount of food coming into the food bank, we are having to purchase more food than ever before, Executive Director Libby Campbell said in a news release. In the last 9 weeks, we have distributed over 1.5 million pounds of food to tens of thousands of hungry West Texas households. 73% of them have never been to a food bank before. Texas Bar Foundation awards Reflection Ministries. OA News at OAOA.com. Reflection Ministries, established to identify victims, equip cities, and provide avenues of restoration for human trafficking victims, has been awarded $10,000 by the Texas Bar Foundation. The ministry's work has been blessed by a partnership with the Texas Bar Foundation, as they also realize the vast scope of resources required to address this horrific crime that cripples communities across the United States, a news release said. Hello again. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 12th, 2020. State and local news. Man charged with assault. OA News at OAOA.com. A 37-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly threw a rock at another man's head and was found passed out on an anthill. Alexander Sanchez was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony, and public intoxication, a Class C misdemeanor. The reported assault happened around 11:20 p.m. May 5th in the 600 block of Santa Rosa Avenue, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. The complainant, identified as Francisco Sanchez, reportedly told officers he had a small cut on his head from when Alexander Sanchez threw a rock that struck his head. Francisco Sanchez stated that he and Alexander Sanchez had been arguing all day and it escalated to the assault. Alexander Sanchez was later found asleep on the ground in the East Alley in the 600 block of Santa Rosa Avenue, and he was intoxicated to the point where he fell asleep on an anthill with multiple ants biting him and him not feeling the bites, the affidavit stated. Officers reportedly smelled a strong odor of alcoholic beverages coming from Alexander Sanchez's breath and person. Alexander Sanchez also had slurred speech and unsteady while standing on flat ground. Alexander Sanchez was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He had two bonds totaling $15,312 and posted bail on May 6th. Woman charged with harassing, stalking ex-husband. OA News at OAOA.com. A 31-year-old man reportedly detailed his ex-wife stalked and harassed him and his wife through text messages, phone calls, and following them around town. Tia McCole Gregg, 31, was arrested and charged with stalking, a third-degree felony. The reported stalking and harassment began February 20th when the complainant, 31-year-old Louis Swaby, stated his ex-wife, Greg, was sending text messages multiple times a day, along with calling him 15 times in a 20-minute period, an Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit stated. Swaby stated he wouldn't answer. Greg reportedly called Swaby at work multiple times, which caused his workday to be disrupted. Swaby stated the calls would get annoying and he would shut his phone off. Swaby stated most of the text messages and phone calls had to do with the young child they shared together, the affidavit detailed. Swaby stated Greg got out of control and a court hearing was held, where both parties were advised to use the court app for communication regarding the child. Swaby stated in the affidavit that Greg disregarded the court order and continued to text him and his wife, 31-year-old Akira Ramirez. Swaby stated in the text messages that Greg would put Ramirez down and make comments about her that were embarrassing to him and Ramirez, the affidavit detailed. Swaby stated Greg would tell them she was following them and had people follow them to watch what they were doing. Swaby also reportedly told deputies that Greg would send him pictures of his vehicle at drive-through lines and send him threatening messages. Swaby stated after contacting law enforcement and telling Greg that they spoke with a deputy that she didn't have to contact them through text messages, phone calls, social media, or any form of communication other than on court app. Swaby stated that he told Greg that if she continued to do so, criminal charges would be filed, the affidavit stated. Swaby stated Greg ignored all requests and continued to send multiple text messages to him and Ramirez throughout the day. Swaby reportedly told deputies that Greg started showing up at his and Ramirez's residence, banging on the front door, trying to speak to them. Swaby stated Greg continued the harassment and stalking until May 3rd. Greg was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. She had one bond totaling $5,000, and she posted bail on Friday, jail records show. Clarification. City Councilwoman Peggy Dean said a quote in a recent article was incorrect. Dean says, in regards to the city attorney, that the council was in full support of her and her judgment and respectful of the changes she felt she could make and still be compliant with the law. Dean said she was responding to questioning that the attorney knew she was wrong because she changed procedures, and Dean said the attorney did not think she was wrong, but had erred on the side of conservatism. Counsel to consider multiple OPD purchases by Michael Merlo, M-M-E-R-L-O at OAOA.com. City Council will consider multiple purchases for the Odessa Police Department at 6 p.m. today in a virtual City Council meeting. One of the requests is for a real-time intelligence center, RTIC, which the City Council agenda details will better equip OPD for the ongoing growth of the city and the emerging technology that equips law enforcement to be better prepared to respond. Assistant City Manager Philip Urrutia said in a phone interview that a portion of the $169,250 purchase will come from forfeiture funds, which are funds that are accounted for during certain arrests that are related to crime activity, and under law, a portion of those funds go towards the city or the police department to improve crime fighting. OPD is also requesting council's approval to purchase a FARO, F-A-R-O, 3D scanner and software for $51,788.59, which Urrutia said is a budgeted expense. Urrutia said that the software can trace crime scenes, they can see where bullets have been, they can trace car accidents. The agenda details that the new scanner and software is more efficient and can scan up to 350 meters at a higher resolution than OPD's current software, and that the traffic and crime scene unit would use the scanner and software to recreate 3D versions of scenes on fatalities, murders, and other high-value crime scenes. Both items are on the consent agenda, have previously been discussed, and can be approved in one motion. During the meeting, Charlene McBride is scheduled to give an update on the 2020 census, and Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohit Sarvanen is scheduled to give a COVID-19 update. The meeting will be held online, and information regarding how to join the meeting via phone or online can be found at https://tinyurl.com/y76hwxu4. Other action. Consent agenda. Consider approval of the request by 2012 Cross B, LLC, owner for original zoning of retail R on 4.14-acre tract located in Section 46, Block 41, T1S, T&P Railroad Company Survey, Ector and Midland Counties, Texas, northwest of the intersection of P-Bar Ranch Road and Legacy Road. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider approval of the request of Tar Heel Holdings, LLC, owners, to rezone from Single Family 4, SF4, to Four Family Residence, 4F, lots 37 through 43, Block 2, Galindo Estates, southwest corner of the intersection of South Crane Avenue and Martinez Place. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider approval of the request of City of Odessa, owner for original zoning of light industrial, LI on approximately 38-acre tract in Section 45, Block 42, T1S, T&P Railway Company Survey, Ector County, Texas, southwest of the intersection of Golder Avenue and Oregon Street. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider approving the purchase of the Real-Time Intelligence Center, RTIC, for the Police Department for $169,250. Consider approving the purchase of a Faro 3D Scanner Model 350S with software for the Police Department for $51,787.59. Appointment of Boards. Citizen comments on non-agenda items. Adjourn. COVID-19 adjustments viewed. Northside Senior Center to reopen for meal deliveries. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners today will consider reopening the Northside Senior Center at 1225 Adams Avenue following a closure of several weeks during the COVID-19 pandemic for only the curbside dispensing and home deliveries of meals. The court has a series of pandemic-related matters slated for the 10 a.m. session at the County Administration Building at 1010 East 8th Street, including the revision of its vendor food services contract to keep cooking meals in-house for senior citizens for the rest of this fiscal year. The commissioners will also consider appointing Dr. B. A. Janadu as the county's local health authority and will review applying for a U.S. Justice Department grant for supplemental coronavirus funding for the sheriff's office. In other business, the court will discuss naming Amy Hendrick to the Permian Basin Community Center's Board of Trustees for a 2-year term beginning Wednesday. Consider approving the retirement of K-9 IKYE to the care of Sheriff's Lieutenant Richard Dixon and view applying for a grant from the National Police Dog Foundation. Discuss authorizing 2 free 5-minute phone calls per week for inmates. Discuss buying a truck with a grapple roll-off system to be used by the Public Works and Environmental Enforcement Departments and review a $266,938 budget amendment to pay for it. Consider okaying the 2020 to 2021 budget calendar. Discuss extending online auctioneer services. Consider amending the software-defined wide area network project to include the County Coliseum and Barnes. Review hiring municipal planning consultant Craig Farmer of Dallas to update subdivision regulations. Consider hiring a department coordinator for the Highways and Streets Department, which has undertaken an extensive roads improvement project. Discuss approving the county's quarterly investment report. Superintendent to present strategic plan so far. OA News at OAOA.com. A presentation on Ector County ISD's strategic plan and a discussion on the response to COVID-19 are the main items on the agenda for the board workshop set for 6 p.m. today. The meeting will take place over the phone due to coronavirus concerns. The district started the strategic planning process in March 2019 and had several meetings before the pandemic stopped it. I will be presenting elements of the strategic plan in order to receive feedback from the board. Once the plan is finalized, we will reevaluate our communication plan and share a new timeline, Superintendent Scott Murray said in an email. The strategic planning team met on December 3rd and narrowed its focus to improving 4 key areas: foundational processes, learning, developing people, and supporting students' families, the district website said. Supplemental agenda material reviews the mission, beliefs, the dates of where things stand to this point, statistics Murray learned during his first 100 days in office, looking, listening, and learning and district objectives. As Murray has said, 6.5% of the class of 2013 earned a level 1 or 2 certificate, a 2-year college degree, or a 4-year college degree within 6 years of high school graduation. Some of the other statistics Murray in the supplemental agenda material shows are 55% of ECISD class of 2018 enrolled in college, 65% of kindergartners was not kindergarten ready in 2019, 57% of kindergartners who attended pre-kindergarten was not kindergarten ready in 2019. 66% of third graders were below grade level in reading in 2019. 68% of secondary students did not meet grade level requirements in Algebra 1 in 2019. Some of the ECISD board goals are the percentage of students achieving or exceeding meets standard on state assessments will increase across all tested content areas from 32% to 60% by May 2024. The percentage of all students in kindergarten through third grade reading on above or above grade level will increase from 60% to 85% by May 2024. The percentage of high school graduates considered college, career, or military ready will increase from 11% to 34% by May 2024. In foundational excellence, the agenda material says ECISD will embed technology for anytime, anywhere teaching and learning, rigorous, relevant, and engaging curriculum, a multiple measure accountability system, equity-based funding and staffing, long-range facilities master planning, enhance and expand family engagement and community partnerships, and schools of choice. Another objective is to recruit, develop, and retain highly effective individuals looking at tomorrow to inform their practices today, and investing in talent, the supplemental material said. The district will begin offering full-day pre-kindergarten for all eligible 4-year-olds and half-day pre-K for 3-year-olds starting in August. ECISD plans a summer learning experience, innovative instructional models, and blended learning.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.